हरि ओ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so process of understanding the Gita, then we have Vedic knowledge is infallible, above all doubts and mistakes. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge is not a question of research, we have to accept knowledge which comes down in disciplic succession. The Gita should be accepted without interpretation, without deletion, and without our own whimsical participation in the matter. The words spoken by the Lord are apurusheya, all perfect transcendental knowledge by revelation. The difficulty is we have this tendency to consider that our independence in the way of action and thinking is actually the cause of our happiness, as opposed to that independence and that thought being brought in line with the Lord. That's the difficulty. That the Lord, knowing everything, then He gives direction to human society, how they can actually make their life perfect. Because remember, you don't have to have all this in the spiritual world, right? Everybody there is perfect. The difficulty is those who have come to this material world, they're not perfect, because they actually separate themselves from the Lord. The problem is not actually that the material energy is, you know, inferior or temporary or this or that. That's just an annoyance. Does that make sense? It's just an annoyance. It's just an inferior energy. The problem is people don't remember God. They don't maintain their relationship with God. That's what the problem with the material world is. Spiritual world, it's nice because everybody maintains and remembers. Right? But the problem is what is it all based on? Interactions all based on what? People are trying to be happy. Right? That's all people want to be, is happy. Right? So, all activity is being done to become happy. So then one is thinking that by being happy, to be happy, I have to control the environment. And I have to directly try to gain that happiness myself. Right? So then that means then one will try the energy, the Lord's energy that one is dealing with, one will therefore try to exploit that energy for one's own purpose. You see the logic, what's happening here? Is you're going to try to exploit it for yourself. and sense that energy is only interested in being engaged in the Lord's service. Therefore, one is given a portion of the creation that is not conscious. So therefore, you can exploit it and it won't complain. Does that make sense? A portion of the spiritual world, you try to exploit it, it will not appreciate it because it's conscious. It is God conscious. But here, it's dead matter, so it doesn't matter. You do whatever you want. You understand? That's the point. That's what's happening. So the difference between the spiritual world and the material world is there everyone remembers God and is acting in a way to assist. And here they're not. That's the difference. Right? That's the difference. It's not something else. We will create that as so many other things, but it's only that much. You connect God into your life, you're God conscious. That's perfect. You don't, then no matter how nice you are, it's not perfect. Because when I say you have all good qualities, but you're still exploiting the material nature for your own purposes. You may say, no, but they're using it for others, giving in charity. But are they not getting back something from that? Are they not, is not their inspiration what they get from doing that work? Seeing the smiling kids now that they got some food or some clothes or some education. You know, seeing those, you know, fish swim very happily in the water without any pollutants coming from the big industries. That's their moments. So without those, they're not going to do it. So it's nicer work than just being self-centered, but still, it's still about themselves. Just they're willing that in their own happiness to include others. Right? The person who's only interested in his own happiness, that's considered the lowest. The person who's willing to see others are happy and they're happy, you know, their happiness is seeing it like this, that's better. But the best is when you're just interested in the other person's happiness. You're not worried about your own. Right? Does that make sense? So it's the natural next step that you don't see here in this material world. Right? It's talked about, you get close to it, but it never actually gets there because you're still exploiting dead matter. Right? Bottom line. So here then the idea is that is how are we going to know something beyond our scope? Right? We don't know God consciousness. So how are we going to know about it just on our own? How are we going to figure it out with our own intelligence? It's not going to happen. Right? Someone who knows, never eaten cooked food, never seen a kitchen before in their life, and then you put them in the kitchen, you expect you're going to get, you know, gourmet cuisine out of that? Just because they're intelligent? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Someone who knows, then they speak. So this is the opposite of what, you know, some great personalities have said. Those who know do not speak. But then why is he speaking? That means he does not know. Yes, he spoke so much. So that means he knows a lot. He doesn't know so much. Okay, so then that means then we have to accept that this apurusheya, the words spoken by the Lord, they're perfect transcendental knowledge. It's not a matter, so therefore, because of that, it's not to be interpreted deletion on our own whimsical, oh, we like this part, we don't like that part. God's, what he says is true. We have to accept that. Otherwise, then it's what you're saying is your brain against God's brain. You're saying God made this world, but he's not so practical in dealing with it. Who talks like that? Vaishnavas? No. Those who, you know, follow the, you know, those who accept the, you know, God of Abraham, Isaac, and who is it? Jacob, right? They're the ones who says God made this world and either lost control or doesn't have control or somebody else, you know, took over or something like that, right? The guy's, you know, basically incompetent. But, you know, at least when everybody's together, you're going to say he's a nice guy, right? You've got to get that faith. And otherwise, what's the common point? What's the commonality? Right? You've got to create some sense of community, right? If you're going to survive, you have to sense of community. So that is the common point. God, of course, you know, he's a bit of a bozo, but hey, he's at least the one guy that everybody can get together behind. Right? Someone else may like this one, may like that one. Does this make sense? So that kind of a thing to say that, because otherwise if you're saying, well, the instructions of the Gita and Prabhupada's instructions don't actually apply in the present day, then what is that saying? Think about it. That is saying that God and his pure devotees don't actually know what's going on in the material world. The material world is so bewildering to them. It's so much superior to their intelligence. That only someone from this time and age, you know, who's, you know, educated in the modern academy can actually tell you what's going on. So if that's true, even if we do want to say that's true, and we're being very careful about this, but we're just making the intellectual connection here, right? Is that God created the world, right? And then he's lost control of it or can't control it. Someone else has taken over. And that person is the one who runs the place. So that means that's the person who knows the place. So that means in the academics, they know the place. They know what's going on. Connected the dots? Yeah, no? Yes, the Kali Chelas. Like that. You understand? You don't understand. Kali Chela. Kali Yuga means, you know, a Chela is someone who, your follower, you know, you have some bigger guy and he has a whole bunch of Chelas. So his Chelas are all his, you know, his boys, you know, they do what he wants. They all sit around and laugh and joke together and do stuff together. You know, what he wants to do, they get it done. So Kali Chela is someone who is actually getting done what Kali Raj wants to do. You know, see that the God consciousness is not happening. Like that. So in the name of intelligentsia, in the name so-called of culture or political correctness and all that, then we fall into this trap. Because there's no problem with being smart. There's no problem with being politically correct. There's no problem with being practical. But as we see, the only difference between the spiritual and material world actually is whether you're God conscious or not. That's the whole point. So if these things are properly connected to Krishna, there's no problem. Since God is unlimited, therefore you can use your intelligence to try to understand some portion of it. You'll never be able to understand the whole thing, but some portion. There's plenty there. One is thinking, well, if I use my intelligence, I'll understand the whole thing, I'll be able to catch it. You know, it's like the dwarf trying saying they're going to catch the moon or something, you know. Does this make sense? It's not going to work. So it's very important to understand this point is that God's perfect, his instructions are perfect. Therefore, they have to be accepted as they are. Right? So interpretation means it can't be our own interpretation. It has to be what is given by the parampara, how they view that. Without deletion, we can't leave something out because we don't like it. Right, without our own whimsical participation, just we get involved whenever we like or not, however we like. No, the direction is given there by the Lord. It's complete. It's complete. So then, that means then the Vedic knowledge is not a question of research. Right? It's already there. It's a matter of understanding. So you contemplate it, you practice it, you study it. So Vedic knowledge is a question of study and practice. Not research. Research is you're trying to find something. No, here it's already found. It says you have to try to understand it. You know, it's not lost. It's there. We have to understand it. Right? The Bhagavad Gita is sitting right here in front of us. So it's not a matter of research to find out, is this the Bhagavad Gita? It's a matter of understanding what's in the Gita. Right? And then, you know, because it's infallible, that it's above all doubts and mistakes. It's the essence of all the knowledge. So Krishna, specifically for this age, has given the essence. Right? That's why it's there in the Mahabharata. Mahabharata is a work meant for the general populace. So that means then the Bhagavad Gita is a work for the general populace. That means everybody can understand Bhagavad Gita if they apply themselves. If they don't apply themselves, We won't understand. But we can apply, we understand. Does this make sense? So this is very important. So this is the process. We have to just accept it. That doesn't mean so one to say, oh, that's blind. No, it's not blind. Blind means is you're going through it in a particular way. You're going through and seeing if it's true. You know, if somebody says, here, if you drop this rock, it'll hit the floor. Right? But you see everybody else drops, they hit the floor. You drop and hit the floor. It's not blind. Right? So Vedic culture means a community of individuals who have themselves each come to the conclusion of the perfection of the Vedic knowledge and lifestyle. Does that make sense? So it's not like lemmings or sheep. It's a matter of each individual on their own has come to that conclusion. That's why it's self-realization. Right? Are any other religion called self-realization? No, because it's done in mass. Everyone gets together, you inspire everyone together, and that's it. And ideally everyone cultivates on their own. No, this starts, each individual has to cultivate on their own. And those persons, they come together as a group. You understand? It's different. So it's not a matter of blind. This is means actually with knowledge you're doing this. People who are so-called intelligent but don't have faith, this is the only way they can do. What is it? It's not a logical, oh, blind faith. But that's what's wrong with blind faith? Right? You understand? It's seen as something, you know, undesirable. You know, it's just not intelligent. It's not. But what's the basis of this argument? Is it logical? No, it's sentiment. It's emotion. So as soon as you say something logical that they cannot defend, then they'll throw it into the emotional field. Oh, blind faith. But it's covered and made to look as though it's intelligent. Oh, that's blind faith. It's supposed to be, oh, aren't I so intelligent? I pointed out that you're just going by sentiment. You're not using your logic. But why did I present it that way? Simply out of sentiment oneself. Because they don't have answers. They don't have answers. That's the thing. They think they should have all the answers, and they can't have all the answers, and they don't like that. So the Vedic culture is a problem because it has all the answers which they don't have. And it hasn't come from them, so they don't want to acknowledge it. Very simple. Because then you're not in control. That means someone else is in control. That means God's in control. And then you have to bring yourself in line with that, which is then the next point. That's something there.
Isn't it a weakness of character that you have to attack the thing because your position is weak?
Yes, in an argument, it is a weakness of character. It's a method that's quite well used, but it's actually not, if someone has more character, they don't have to do that. So it is a matter of that. So, you know, it's an accepted technique, but it can be, much of the time it's fallacious. It's in argumentation. It's a bogus presentation. You cover up something with something else, and it's not necessarily. It may be the thing is a fact, but it's not connected to the situation on that, so it has actually no relevance. Or it's something that's completely made up. Now, in other words, it doesn't actually have any real relevance, but it emotionally is strong and all that, and so that's the general thing that happens. Like that. So that's why then one has to develop character and all that. Otherwise then one will fall prey to the same thing, you know, and then it doesn't really get anywhere. So even though you have something valuable to say, when people react emotionally, you yourself can't keep from doing the same thing. So it's just practice. Practice your sadhana on these things and you can start to. Is that okay? Yes.
What does it mean to develop character?
What does it mean to develop character?
Yes.
Develop character means that you can practically apply the teachings of the Vedic literatures as a lifestyle. That's developing character. Okay. Yes.
So when they say, why should we accept, or based on what should we accept the Vedic knowledge that's been coming from God, maybe it's just from Maybe it's not coming from God.
Maybe it's not. But then you want to go your whole life like that? Maybe the girl does love you, but because you just haven't said, so you don't know. So you're going to spend the whole rest of your life like that? That's called a loser.
Experiment.
It's not a matter of experiment. It's a matter of people have tried this and it's worked. Or they're coming from that platform. So there must be some understanding. Otherwise, why should we have faith? It means, as an academic, you will speak from a particular platform. Why do you accept that? Why do you accept Leakey knows anything about archaeology? Why do we accept that, you know, Stephen Hawking knows anything about physics? The guy can't even walk, you know, and then we're supposed to accept his, you know, like how the universe works. You know what I'm saying? Why is that? It's simply their opinions. So then if you want to come down to it and bring it to that level, okay. So now it's the opinion of somebody who's obviously fallible. Right? And after 10, 20 years, people are just going to, you know, say his theories are bogus. Right? Einstein, in his day, he was the man. And now, I don't know. You know, some support, some don't. Right? So if it's going to come down to it, then it's a matter of, okay, so you have your authorities, who is obviously they're fallible. And then we have others who, by people's own observation, their own experience, say or not. That's just a matter of, if it comes down to that, who you accept. So we're going to accept this line. And, as Prabhupada mentioned to the professor in Moscow, who was doing the same thing, he said, at the time of death, we'll find out who's right. You know what I'm saying? Because it doesn't matter who you are, what your background. When you die, Yamaraj is there. It's just the way it is. Does that make sense? Someone can argue like that. What's the benefit? Why are we afraid that it might be God, there might be a supreme authority? What is actually the fear? We lose control. That's why. So it's thought that, oh, well, it could be just anything. Now you feel you're still in control. So it's actually emotional security that the, you know, modern intellectual can't accept this kind of thinking. But, you know, that's been a problem for a long time. The same kind of intellectuals thousands of years ago had Socrates killed because he said there's an absolute authority. So it's always been a dilemma in the philosophy. You know, so, you know, Socrates lost and Aristotle won. Right? Because he's just going, what you see is what you get. That's it. So if that's what you want to go by, then what you see is what, then how do we accept that you're not just making it up, that, you know, your, you know, that feelings that you have with your friends are, you're just not saying that just to make others, you know, jealous. You don't actually have them. They're not actually there, real. You're just saying that. How can we tell? What is the authority? You came over for lunch and said, oh, yes, I'm satisfied. You want more? No, I'm satisfied. How do we know? You're just saying that. How do you actually judge? You know what I'm saying? So you can take this into everything. So these are what your bogus philosophies do. Jainism, Buddhism, these kind, they throw doubts on this, right? Jainism, Shyat, Syadvad. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's that, but maybe it's not. And that way then they just keep themselves busy. That's what it's for. Because if you look at it, the academics that have a problem with this, what do they do? Of what benefit does an academic do in this modern society? What do? They sit in little offices and little rooms and little corridors that unless you're a student in that school, you'll never see them or know they exist. And once you leave those corridors, you'll never think of them again. You know what I'm saying? They don't do anything for the society, really, except for uphold the principle that education's important. You know, which it is. But that's established by God, not by them. You know what I'm saying? You have universal laws. Education is accepted by everyone. All human societies accept that some education is necessary. Right? You know, the family unit, how, you know, that there is such a thing, community, economics, right? Politics, justice, warfare, you know, some higher supreme. Every civilization, every culture accepts these. Why? How is that? If it's by chance. Because it's God's laws. So a scientist is trying to understand laws that are already in effect, not ones that he's created. So therefore, since he has to understand something higher, there's many aspects of it. And since they only deal in numbers, maybe this is an area not for them. Fine. No one asked Steve Hawkins to be, you know, give an opinion on, you know, what good food is, or good clothes, or good music. It's not his field. So why don't they just accept it's not their field? Right? They know Indology? Yes, great. That is India according to the view of Max Müller, as hired by the British. But actually what's going on, that's a completely different thing. Does that make some sense? Because otherwise it comes down to their mentor, which, you know, they themselves, where they get it from. You know, so it's like this. The West has been thinking about philosophy for how long? Yeah, like that. How long has India been thinking philosophy? It starts with philosophy. So if we're going to take, okay, you know, we're better at this, you know, but who's better? Does that make some sense? Sure? Yes.
The Maharaji instructing yesterday Narada Muni saying that the Vedas are compared to like a place of pilgrimage crows.
The Vedas are compared to a place of pilgrimage for crows. Are you sure you didn't get your you didn't read that improperly? I mean, first time you've heard like this? Anybody else heard like this? No. It means those literatures that are not about the Supreme Lord, those are a pilgrimage place for crows.
Because yesterday I didn't compile the Vedas, and Narada Muni is instructing him to compile the Bhagavatam.
But is the Bhagavatam in any way against the principles of the Vedas?
No.
No, so why would you call the Vedas, you know, a place of pilgrimage for crows and then base a book on it? But that doesn't mean it's a pilgrimage place of pilgrimage for crows. It means if you understood this, you didn't quite catch the point. If you heard somebody else speak like this, they missed the point. You know what I'm saying? Because everything, you talk about this rock in relation to Krishna, then, you know, then you get spiritual benefit. You talk about it not in relation to Krishna, you get entangled. So the rock has a fault? No, so the Vedas, they're all about Krishna. All the Vedas are explaining is your relationship with Krishna, the process to serve Krishna, and the ultimate goal of love of God. That's all they're explaining. But they're explained, since Veda means knowledge, they're explaining it through every possible aspect of interest and activity of a human being. You know what I'm saying? All the various interests of a human being, whatever they would want, then you have to explain God in connection to that, because that's what is distracting them from God. Right? The person is absorbed in his family life. So you have to explain family life in relationship to God. The person is distracted by his money and economics. You have to explain that in relationship to God. The person is distracted by health. You have to explain that in relationship with God. It's just like here, the community here. How many people in this community are all also health conscious and, you know, natural food freaky? Right? Plenty. But if you go into it, the reason that they're doing that has absolutely nothing to do with God. Nothing to do with God. That's why they're in anxiety and they make everybody else in anxiety. Because it has nothing to do with God. It's only their own preference. Their own thing. You know what I'm saying? It's not God. It means maybe ultimately they're saying, well, if I'm healthy, I can work in Krishna's service. But health takes precedent over sadhana and everything else. And the amazing thing is they never get it. That's what's really, you know, unfortunate. Is that even though they make such a stink, make everyone uncomfortable, they themselves are not healthy. Otherwise, if it was, why would they have to force the issue? Everyone would go, wow, look at them. They're so healthy. What are they doing? Right? But nobody is. You know what I'm saying? So that means the Vedas have to talk about health. That's why there's Ayurveda. But you have to be intelligent enough to know that the Ayurveda is only talking about, you know, health and that in relationship to God. If you're not intelligent, you won't catch that. You know? Or society. Family life is so important. People must have their relationships and with this and that and do all their different things. But Manu then defines how to be God conscious in relationship to family life. Right in the introduction, that's exactly what it says. The sages approach Lord Brahma and say, you know Varnashram in connection with the Lord so that by performing one's duties in Varnashram, one can actually become God conscious. That's right in the introduction. That's exactly why it's there. Right? It's not a bunch of, you know, social political laws. It's how to engage Varnashram in the Lord's service. In other words, Daiva Varnashram. That's what it's for. But people will read it and not end up with Daiva Varnashram. So that's their foolishness. So what he's saying is that the common person won't, from the Mahabharata, catch God consciousness. We read Mahabharata. Are we not God conscious? Right? We're able to be. Why? Because we understand the conclusions that Bhagavatam gives. So it's still there. We can read the Veda. We can read the Bible. We can read anything and you can bring out God consciousness. You can read Mark Twain and you can show God consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, because you know the conclusion. Now, Vyasadeva hadn't understood how much Krishna had entered everything and in between everything. But it doesn't mean that the knowledge that was given was imperfect. Right? But now is to bring out the essence, because there's so many layers. There's the direct meaning, the indirect meaning, the hidden meanings of everything. So he's not getting to the essence. Because if you're going to start up something, you start with the externals. You don't start with the subtleties. Right? Somebody learns skiing, you first start, you know, these are skis. These are boots. Boots go in the skis. The skis are go this way, not that way. You're like that. You're standing up, you know. And all these different things. And then, you know, if you're on flat ground, you go nowhere. If you're on slope ground, then you go somewhere. If you're on really slope ground, you're in trouble. Right? So, you know, all these things that they have to do, you know. If it's white and powdery, it's okay. If it's black and hard, avoid it. Right? You know what I'm saying? So all these externals you learn, and then with time they learn the subtleties that are behind it. You don't start with the subtleties. Right? So therefore the form is what people can relate to. So Vyasadeva is making sure that everyone is understanding what is the form they have to practice. At the same time, he's giving the metaphysics, but people just generally aren't interested. And he's giving the God consciousness. But he hasn't shown how this God consciousness enters into absolutely everything in your life. You want to pick your nose. You know, you actually have to know the proper science. And that science is based on philosophy. Like that. It's based on philosophy. Otherwise it won't work. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's for crows. No, the Vedic literature, we have nothing bad to say. In fact, if we can't take things back to the Vedic literatures, it's a problem. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy is not bona fide if you can't take it back to you know, the Upanishads and Vedanta. In fact, Chaitanya Sukshamrita, that's exactly what he does. Every quote is from Veda or Upanishad. And he's establishing worship of Radha and Krishna and Prema. He's quoting Upanishad. He makes it very clear there. Manu says, if you don't accept the Vedic literatures and the authorities of Scripture, you're not worth associating with. In fact, people should avoid that person. He should be nice and all that, cultured and that, but don't get close. Don't eat lunch with them. Don't, you know, I mean, you know, as a close thing. You know, you may formally eat lunch, but, you know, you wouldn't go to their house or invite them over. You wouldn't marry into their family. You wouldn't reveal your mind. These kind of people aren't fit for, you know, human interaction. Because Manu is about Varnashram, so such people aren't fit. Because they don't accept scriptures. They don't accept authority. You know, and then immediately, oh, but what about our free will for our thinking? It's always about our free thinking, as if it's gets us any benefit. As if modern man is so much more peaceful and satisfied and contented than man was 50 or 100 years or 200 years ago. You know? The thing is that the illusion is so great, their lifestyle is degrading and eroding, and they have nothing left, but still they feel, well, I can think. But according to Yoga Shastra, then all it is that their minds are becoming more restless by being involved in the material sphere. And they're so much in illusion that they don't understand that what they're thinking has nothing to do with actual reality. They can't apply it in their life and get any benefit for it. Right? And then they're complaining about the guys who are just, you know, the mudas that just go around and just do what they're doing. They don't doubt anything, don't have any specific, you know, drive or anything. They just get by day to day. But they're actually in a better position because at least they don't propagate ignorance. They just themselves practice it. You know what I'm saying? And those people who are talking like that, very rarely there's someone who gets something done, who's actually just doing something in this world. You know what I'm saying? You go up to a practical, together, organized businessman or politician, generally he won't speak like this. He may have doubts about his practicality and it's useful in people's lives. You know? But he won't doubt the concept of authority in the science. Because that's why he's successful. Because he understands that. The people who doubt the science are the ones that they can't use it. They don't do anything. You look at it. Look at the people who talk like this. What are they doing in this world? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Because it's ignorance mixed with passion. Therefore, it's completely useless. At least they're a little more peaceful if it's just ignorance. They don't make any trouble. Better than that, then, is passion. Because at least they're getting something done. Now, if you can take that mentality, and because they're willing to work and willing to follow a science, willing to make an endeavor, now if you can get them to do that in goodness, bingo. Then you have somebody dynamic. But these people who are in passion and ignorance and just talk all this nonsense, what benefit are they themselves getting or anybody else? Nothing. Right? Just not getting anywhere. Is that okay?
So it doesn't mean that the necessity for Vyasadeva to compile the Bhagavatam was due to the to Kali Yuga before the Vedas were sufficient?
No, it's not a matter of... No, Bhagavatam is the essence anyway. The thing is by the parampara and the association, then people could take the Vedic literatures as they were and be able to contemplate them and apply them in their life and get the results. When that is not so clear, then the Vedanta is established and the Bhagavad Gita is established because they give that essence. But because that doesn't expand very much, it still is very much an intellectual process there. Then the Bhagavatam is there to give practical example. And it brings out specifically, you know, brings alive the element of relationship and rasa. Otherwise, the mechanics of it is given in the others. It's there. It's a very same. That's why it says the natural commentary. He doesn't say that the Vedanta is bogus. It's the natural commentary. You know what I'm saying? So it's a fine point. It's not that we have to somehow know to get beyond that the gross element. It's this or it's that. Okay. Well, if the Vedas aren't bogus, then you know why aren't we reading all that? No, it's a matter of they're bona fide, but Bhagavatam's giving the essence. It's giving what's actually important. From that, then you view the other Vedic literatures. So if you can just run your life from Bhagavatam, that's the best. But if other aspects in your life are very important, that's why these Vedic literatures are there. That's why Prabhupada mentions them. As we go through the Gita, you'll see Prabhupada, in so many points, brings up so many scriptures to read. And when you see, you might be shocked. Because it just doesn't come to mind. The Prabhupada in the third chapter says, you know, the leaders of the society should study Manu. He doesn't say everybody, the leaders. Right? Because otherwise, how do you deal with social systems? How do you deal with justice? You know, how do you deal with economics? How do you put the whole thing together? How do you deal with family life without Manu? You understand? Because people aren't just satisfied to chant Hare Krishna and that's it. If they are, then great. We don't need so many of it. But since they're not, does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? Yes.
Well, as the statement of pilgrimage for crows, does it refer to non-Vedic scriptures?
It's specifically non-Vedic scriptures. But means that will definitely be there. But it specifically means that literature, which is, you know, you could say the literature itself is not talking about God. Okay, then you can say that's a pilgrimage for crows, just on its own. But even if it is something that's talking about God, if you don't understand it in relationship to God, the benefit you get is that of like a pilgrimage of crows. Because all you're going to pull out of it is your own, like here, interpretation, deletion, and whimsical participation. So the Vedic literatures aren't a pilgrimage of crows.
Would you say, at least in terms of the Western, there's many people that interpret the Bible in many ways. Would you say that scripture would fall under that category?
Means? What's the importance of establishing that scripture? Why not Lord of the Rings or something? Or, you know, the Oxford Dictionary or... You know, the Sun, you know, how you say, newspaper. You know what I'm saying? Why do you pick out of all the, you know, millions of books in the Western literature, why do you pick that one out?
Maybe because, at least in terms of your saying, if it speaks about God, then it should be, it's not particularly, would fall under that category. But then it's this interpretation.
But then it's not the scripture's fault that people misinterpret. It's individuals. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is what we're looking at, the essential point to glean from this is if it's in connection with the Lord, it's valuable. If it's not in connection with the Lord, it's not valuable. So if you can connect it to the Lord, it becomes valuable. But if you can't connect to the Lord, it's not valuable. You know what I'm saying? So that's the essential point. Not, well, this one's this, that one. That's the external approach. But the point is it connected to the Lord? You know what I'm saying? So that people accept the authority of God, they accept His instructions, they accept the lifestyle, you know, there's some consideration of His instructions. And, you know, they're trying to have faith in God, they're trying to be, you know, improve their life, uplift their life, you know, in connection with God. All these things are good. It's just that, it's just a matter of how far it goes. It's just like, is first grade good or not? It's good. What happens if someone finishes first grade and says, that's all the more you need and this is it? And that's it. Is that good? No. So that's the point. Is that whatever it is, if someone's starting anywhere, that's good. But what's good about it is its connection to the Lord. You know, something doesn't stand on its own without its connection to the Lord. So the Vedas, because they're coming from the Lord, naturally they're going to be good.
it a matter of personal application?
It's a, in relationship to what?
To, maybe I'm just thinking, maybe we're scientists, and there's so many bogus scientific doctrines that deny the existence of God. But then if
science is numbers. How does numbers say confirm or deny God's existence? So that's whimsical participation. Numbers are numbers. What do they say? Is that the number told you about God? You know, I mean, do the quantum, you know, what is it? Quantumists, do they attribute qualities of the numbers? You know, one is authority, two is like this, like that, nine is the transcendental. Do they attribute these qualities? No. So it's just plain numbers. So how do these numbers say there's God or there's no God? All they tell you is how light something is, how quick it's moving, you know, how much mass it has, you know, whether the 2 minutes is up, you know, for their, how you say, microwaving their, how you say, TV dinner. You know, these kind of things is what their math does. Does that make sense? So it doesn't establish God or not. That's their own personal opinion. They try to make it that the science doesn't. The science doesn't do that. So what? Because you can tell what an eclipse is. Does that say there's a God or no God? Who made the sun and moon and made it work like? Who made gravity? Who made matter? Who lit the fuse? You know what I'm saying? So they can't answer any of these. So they should just stick to areas that they can. And quit pontificating areas they don't have a qualification. They can't speak on God. They're not religionists. They're not philosophers. They know math. That's what they know. They know mathematics. Bus. So they should stick to math. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so then in this process then, we see is, it's coming from the Lord, therefore it's infallible, so it's above all mistakes, so we should accept that as it is, without interpretation, deletion, or whimsical participation, and it's not a question of research, it's a matter of this knowledge is coming down in the parampara. Having done that, then the result, we move to the fifth portion, is that Krishna, Arjuna, from understanding, he surrenders. So this brings about the surrender to Krishna. Right? So that will be the result. If you understand Gita in this way, then the result will be, we'll come to that platform of being established in proper Krishna consciousness. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay, so then that will... Okay. And that will then, I guess, get us tomorrow. So that was summing up as the fourth section. Now, then tomorrow we'll start the fifth.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.